Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Today in Connecting Faith, I'm very excited about a new book, and it's certainly timely at this season of the year. So we're going to spend some time talking with Jordan Easley, who's written a new book called Life Change, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live. And let me introduce Jordan to you. Jordan's the teaching pastor and campus director at Long Hollow Baptist Church in Hendersonville, Tennessee. It's a suburb of Nashville. They have multi-site work there. Previous to that, Jordan's had the opportunity to be at some recognizable places, Second Baptist Church in Houston, serving along Senior Pastor Dr. Ed Young, Sr. there. And he was also at Prestonwood Baptist and First Baptist in Atlanta with Dr. Charles Stanley. And Jordan has written this wonderful new book, the subtitle, again, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live. It's called Life Change. And Jordan, I guess I'll just start with the question. I mean, this is certainly the time of year when it seems like change is a constant, or at least that's the idea of change. And so let's talk a little bit about how this book came about and if you were thinking sort of New Year's when you wrote it.
I really was. You know, tomorrow, everybody in the country is going to be setting out on this new journey of change. And really, it's going to be an attempt at change. And, you know, so many people in pastoring, you talk to so many people that are going through something in their life where they're trying to change something. They're trying to lose weight, or they're trying to fix their marriage, or they're trying to fix one of their children. And you just see so many times as a pastor that people attempt change, but very rarely achieve it. And, you know, as I was going through a couple of different counseling sessions and things, I started just really diving into the Word. And, you know, I was encouraged to read the book of Mark. And as I read the book of Mark, I started reading these personal stories of people that wanted to change. And they were hungry for change, and they needed change, but they couldn't change their life themselves. And it just reminded me of so many people that I've talked to throughout the years that are in that same boat. You know, they're wanting to change, or they need to change, but they can't change their own life. So through that book of Mark, and we'll probably talk more about this, you know, you just see these people that couldn't change their life themselves, but their life ended up changing because they tapped into the power of God. So my research basically took me to ask the question, you know, how can I change by tapping into the power of God? How can people change? How can we experience something that we're incapable of experiencing ourselves by simply trusting God with our life? Does that make sense?
It does. And, I think it's interesting because we live in a world full of self-help books and seminars. So how is this? I mean, this is not a self-help book, really, is it?
It's not. It's actually a book that tells you that self-help books, they don't work. You know, even in the introduction of the book, I mean, I start out by looking at some of the things, the phrases that you type in on Google. You know, I just did a little research. I typed in the phrase, you know, how to lose weight before my wedding. There were 19,600 results. How to join Alcoholics Anonymous, there were 55,900 results. How to stop biting my fingernails, you know, there's all these different ways that people are trying to do something. How to quit smoking, 884,000 results popped up on Google. I mean, people are trying to change. But when you pull up the phrase, how to change my life, over 5.7 million results, because everybody's looking to change. But the thing is, it's not going to be a step study. It's not going to be, you know, something that you're going to try new. The fact of the matter is, you're going to try to change, and probably if you try to do it by yourself, you're going to fail. And that's kind of depressing to hear.
Yeah.
But the truth is, you know, if you want to take this little quiz, is there something in your life that needs to change? You can answer that question right now. Can you change it by yourself? Just answer that question. And a lot of people will say yes. But the fact of the matter, if I asked another question and said, if it was a matter of life and death, could you change then? You know, the book kind of starts off by by asking those same questions. It says, you know, a wife says to her husband, you know, if you don't change, I'm leaving. A doctor says to his patient, if you don't change, you're going to die. A financial planner will say to his client, if you don't change, you're going to lose everything. A warden says to an inmate, you know, that's about to be released, if you don't change, you're going to be here again soon. And the truth is, you try real hard to change your life. But you, if you look back at your history, you'll find that most of the time we try to change, we fail. And it's a frustrating topic, but it's the truth.
Well, Jordan, let's talk about maybe before we talk about, you know, some of the important lessons from the Mark's gospel. Let's talk about what keeps us from changing. I mean, are there some things that get in the way typically?
Well, you know, I think that if you look spiritually, you've got to be reminded that, you know, Satan, he doesn't take holidays. You know, we're sitting at home watching football today, but the truth is Satan's working against you right now. And he doesn't want you to change. He doesn't want you to become better. He wants you to remain the same. He wants you to remain in your sin. He wants you to remain in your misery. Because if you change, it's a testament that God is at work and that great things are possible. And he doesn't want you to be in that position. So it's you against Satan a lot of times. And you know, that's where we fail, is we decide that we're going to try to take him on. And when we take Satan on, we're going to lose if we're fighting him by ourselves. You know, the Bible talks about him. He's the most powerful creature that's ever been created. The Bible talks about him at one point being the most beautiful and the most powerful creature that God ever created. And, you know, he fell, but, you know, he's still pretty powerful. And when we go head-to-head against him, you know, it turns out to be disaster in our life. And that's a lot of the problem is Satan is against us, and he doesn't want us to be better. He doesn't want us to change or to progress at all. He wants us to remain in our own misery, no matter what that is. And that's not even – I'm not even talking about, you know, changing spiritually. I'm talking about – you know, I want to lose weight. Well, you know, he doesn't want you to. You know, there's all kinds of different ways that you say, well, I want to change. I want to become a better person. But you're fighting a pretty tough opponent.
Is it? I mean, can we maybe use that as an excuse sometimes, though? I mean, say, well, you know, the devil made me do it, or you know. There's a side of it that we have to sort of take some steps too. I know you'll get to, we'll talk some practical steps toward the end, but, you know, can we just use that as an excuse? Say, well, you know, I couldn't help myself.
Well, you know, you can always find an excuse. And, you know, a lot of times we have to find excuses because we fail in our search of change. And in that search of change, you know, we think that, well, this is going to happen. You know, I'm going to go 6 months. I'm going to work out 3 days a week or 4 days a week. But what happens is three or four weeks into it, what happens is we find excuses for why we can't do what we committed to do. And so we're always going to be able to find excuses. And, yeah, the devil's going to always be there for us to use as an excuse. The fact of the matter is change something that you're pursuing for you, or is it something that you're truly desperate for? You know, when you're desperate for change, it changes the game. But even when you're desperate, you know, there's going to be times when you fail if you try to do it in and of your own strength.
We'll talk more about that in a moment, because we can get into Mark's gospel, where there's some great insight for us put together in the new book from Jordan Easley, our guest today. The book is called Life Change, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live. A timely topic as we head into the new year with Jordan Easley. The book is published by B&H Books, and Jordan serves as a teaching pastor and campus director at Long Hollow Baptist in Hendersonville, Tennessee. And he's with us today on Connecting Faith, and we'll continue in just a moment. Your support of Faith Radio makes a difference every day of the year, and we're thankful. When you make an ongoing gift of $15 a month or more, we'll send you our exclusive 2014 Faith Radio calendar as a way to say thanks in a very special, tangible way. This full-color 12-month calendar contains stunning images from around the Upper Midwest. So visit myfaithradio.com/support to give your gift today. Your gift helps change lives all across the Midwest. Thanks.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected today with Jordan Easley, who's a teaching pastor and campus director at the Long Hollow Baptist. And Jordan has written a new book called Life Change, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live. And we're getting some great insights today about change. And as we are looking at the new year, there's a lot of areas that we want to change. And Jordan, I've heard it said that, you know, we tend not to change until the pain of the present is greater than the fear of the future. I'm wondering, have you discovered there's what things trigger change? Is it getting the doctor's report or the, you know, the spouse saying this is it, or what are some triggers?
You know, I think when people are really desperate for change, it's when they find themselves laying flat on their back. It's when you get that report. It's when you get that horrible news. And, you know, when something needs to change, that's different than when something wants to change. And, you know, people are triggered in their life, and there's different things that are going to set that off. But, you know, when a parent has a child and the child is doing fine, there's no need for change in your mind. But when something happens to the child, that's when you turn to God a lot of times. That's when you turn to different avenues of change. It's when your marriage is starting to fall apart. It's when the finances are going south. It's when you lose your job. It's when you find out one of your family members is near death. You know, people, there's a reaction to change. And a lot of times when that happens, people don't know where to turn. They'll turn to a friend. They'll turn to an advisor. Or they'll turn to the internet to try to find an answer. But the truth is, everything that we need to know about those critical times in life, they're written in God's Word, and the Bible tells us that if we want to change, it's all about where we turn. Our direction is going to determine our destination, and our destination is going to determine our destiny. And you know, a lot of times we will turn a lot of different directions before we finally turn to God. I remember when I was serving at First Baptist Atlanta with Dr. Charles Stanley, I was spending some time with him one time, and he said, you know, people just turn the wrong way when they need something to change in their life. This is something he told me. He said, when you need to change something in your life, don't run to the change, but run to the change agent, Jesus. He said, because when you run to the change, you're going to fail, but when you run to Jesus, he can change your life. And it just reminded me, you know, that wherever we're running, whatever we're pursuing, that's going to be the avenue we take to experiencing that change in our life. And if we don't turn to Christ, there's a good chance that change isn't going to happen.
Well, talking about running to Jesus, in your book, Life Change, you spend time going through stories from the Gospel of Mark where people were not always running to Jesus, and in some cases, you know, others brought them. But let's talk about maybe just are there some common themes in those stories of change as you develop them in the book?
You know, I didn't even know when I started writing this book, I didn't even know that there was going to be a theme. But there really is. Because if you look at all of the stories that are mentioned in this book, the book of Mark, you see a common theme of desperation. I tell a kind of a funny little story about, you know, I took a few of my coworkers, some of my staff guys, to lunch one day. I took them to this Mexican food restaurant in Texas, and they were famous for their fajitas. Everybody in the whole restaurant was saying, you've got to get the fajitas. The fajitas here are incredible. So I was like, okay, we're going to get the fajitas. There are five or six of us sitting around the table. I said, let's just have the fajita platter. And so they bring this huge platter of fajitas, and I mean, it's chicken and beef and shrimp, and there's onions and peppers all over this plate. And it looked fantastic. They had homemade tortillas, and they were starting to serve us. And I can remember as we were making these fajitas, you know, I'm like, man, this is going to be fantastic. And then I kind of reached for one of these peppers, and the waitress looks at me and she said, sir, you don't want to do that. That's not something you want to mess with. That's more of a, you know, a decoration. And I was like, okay, I put it back. Well, one of the guys, his name was Ryan, he reaches for that same pepper. I was like, hey, you might not want to do that. And then everybody starts teasing him, like, yeah, you can't do that. You can't handle that. And, you know, Ryan was kind of a shy guy, very soft-spoken, not somebody who's going to be in the spotlight a whole lot. But he, in that moment, he felt the pressure to eat that pepper. And everybody's like, do it, you know, see if you can get him to do it. And you know, it wasn't too long before he was like, okay, I'm going to put this pepper in my mouth. I'm going to eat it. And he puts the pepper into his mouth. And as soon as he does, everybody grabs their water cups and puts them underneath the table. And somebody grabbed Ryan's water cup, puts it underneath the table. And we watched his face go from like a tan color to being bright red. It was brighter than the pepper was before he put it in his mouth. And in that moment, you got to see Ryan. I mean, it was like a cartoon, you know, where they start blowing smoke. Flames are coming out of his mouth. And we got to see him transform into being another person. With us hiding all the water at that point, Ryan stood up in a crowded restaurant of people. I mean, it was a 20-minute wait for us to even get into the door. So it was packed with people, and Ryan stands up and starts to walk around the restaurant at a pretty quick pace. At that point, he finally locates a pitcher of water. It was located on somebody else's table. There was an elderly couple that were having lunch there that day. And he walks over to the table. He picks the pitcher up off of their table. He puts it up to his mouth, and he downs pretty much the entire pitcher of water, spilling it all over himself. Mm. And, you know, as I was reading the stories in the book of Mark, I was reminded of one thing. I was reminded of the desperation of the people. And as I was reading that, you know, you're reading stories of, you know, people that are in need of healing. They're in need of freedom. They're in need of something supernatural to happen in their life. And they're desperate for it. And, you know, I was reminded that when you're desperate, you'll do just about anything. When you're desperate, it changes who you are. It changes who you are. It changes everything about you and what you're willing to do in order to experience the change that you need in your life. And, you know, with Ryan, you know, he was desperate. He needed a drink. There's no way in the world that on a normal afternoon he would have walked up and taken a pitcher off somebody's table and downed it right there in the restaurant. But in that moment, he had to. You know, he needed to. And you know, in the book of Mark, I'm just reminded that when we get desperate for Jesus, when we get desperate for him, he doesn't leave us hanging. You know, when we as his children, when we run to him, when we pursue him, when we're desperate for him, he's there, and he's not going anywhere. And that ought to be an encouragement to us believers, you know, that we have a Father who he's not abandoning us in this situation. You know, when we come to him and we're desperate and we're talking to him, listen, he's listening to us. He's hearing us and he's answering us. And we don't always get the answer that we want to hear, but I believe that many times when we come as children of God and we're on our face before him and we're desperate for him to intervene in our life, I believe that he shows up in big ways and he does supernatural things that don't make sense to us. And the outcome, I believe, is certainly different when we approach God in those moments of change.
But there is, of course, within that, those moments of desperation probably lead us to do things that would be uncomfortable or, you know, maybe not according to societal norms. And think about, you know, maybe the man with leprosy or the woman who, you know, follows Jesus in the crowd because she's had an issue of blood. I mean, those, there are some, maybe some overcoming personal embarrassment.
Oh, yeah. In your pursuit of change, which is actually a pursuit of Jesus, God is going to put you in a position where you're going to have to do some things that are a little extreme. Most of the stories in the book of Mark, really in the entire Bible, they're about people doing extreme things to get to God. But you know what? That's no different than what we see in our culture today. You look around and people are trying to get to God even today. And we do extreme things. You look at different religions that say, you know, in order to get to God, you have to do certain things. You have to, you know, pray at certain times, or you have to kill people, or I mean, there's a lot of different beliefs on this is what you have to do in order to get to God. But the truth is, to get to God, you have to believe. You have to believe God, and you know, I think that has a big part, a big thing to do with, you know, how we run to God and how we trust God is really how we believe in God. You know, I read a stat the other day that said 92% of Americans believe in God. You know, you read that Satan believes in God. The demons in hell believe in God. And so when it says in John 3:16 that all you have to do is believe, it makes you wonder, you know, kind of, well, what does America think about that? Does that mean that 92% of Americans are going to heaven because they believe in God? Well, absolutely not. You know, we know that. The reason that that's in there is because, well, that word believe is a little different than what we know is believe. You know, there's an inherited belief. That doesn't get you to heaven. That doesn't get you positionally where you want to be with God. That just means you come from a long legacy of believers. You know, that doesn't save you. You talk about an intellectual belief. You know, that's a belief that a lot of people have. They believe that there's a God. You know, they see the evidence of God everywhere. They see the creation, so they understand that there must be a creator. But an intellectual belief, that doesn't get you to heaven. That doesn't get you positionally where you want to be with God. That doesn't get you to him. That word in John 3:16, that word believe, it's the Greek word pistuo. It means to hold something so true that there are incredible consequences in your life because of the belief that you have. It's a belief that changes who you are. It changes you from the inside out. It changes the priorities you have and the people that you hang out with and the things you think about and talk about. It changes who you are from one person to the next. So when the Bible's talking about we have to believe in God if we want to experience those changes, listen, you have to first believe in God the right way. There's a lot of people who think they're going to heaven that don't really believe in God the way that the Bible says that we're supposed to believe. So I believe that foundationally it starts with our belief. And once we believe in God, then we can run to God. And when we run to him and when we're desperate for him, I believe in those pivotal moments, those critical moments of life change, I believe that our Father, he hears our prayers and he doesn't leave us or forsake us, but he's right there engaged with us. And that's a powerful time.
It's interesting that, you know, so many times Jesus pointed out belief, right? Whether it's, you know, the father with the son who was demon-possessed and, you know, he said, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Or even if it was, you know, the friends bringing the paralytic. I mean, they had great faith.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's pretty awesome. You know, that's one of my favorite stories in this entire book is the paralytic. You don't think about it that way, but the friends you surround yourself really do play a big impact on your life. You know, you can run to change all you want, but there's going to be times when you're immobilized. You know, you can't do anymore. You've asked Jesus, you've prayed, you've been desperate, you've done all of that, but still you remain paralyzed in your current state. And I just think it's interesting that you know, the friends he surrounded with, himself with. He's surrounded by friends with faith. And when you surround yourself with friends with faith, it's crazy to see how those guys can pick up a corner of a mat and do something together that he could have never done himself. It's pretty cool. I mean, I think about that in my own friendships. You know, am I surrounding myself with friends with faith? If it were up to just my friends, would they take me closer to Jesus, or do they take me further away from Jesus? And you know, you've got a lot of people that are listening to this show today, and they're trying to experience some kind of change in their life. They're trying to experience some monumental change. There's people out there that are in desperate need of healing. There's people out there that are in desperate need of something for a family member or a friend or themselves, and they're listening today saying, well, how can I experience that change in my life? You know, if nothing else, just look at the people that you're surrounding yourself with. You know, the paralytic had to do that. There had to be a day when he was like, man, you know, are these friends going to get me closer to the change? Or are they going to take me away from it? And luckily for him, he was surrounded by incredible guys who picked up that mat, and they carried him when he couldn't walk. And they climbed up to the top of that house when there's no way he could have done that in his own strength. They're the ones who dug the hole and through the roof, and they're the ones who lowered him down to Jesus. They were the ones that held the rope while their friend was lowered down to Christ, where he's the one that can change. Once again, it's not pursuing the change. They didn't take him to the hospital. They didn't take him to a specialist. They took him to the change agent, Jesus, because they knew, they believed, they had faith, they were desperate. They did everything that they knew to do to get him close to Christ. And those are the kind of friends we've got to surround ourselves with, right? I mean, those are the kind of people that are going to build us up and not tear us down. And so that has a lot to do with the process of pursuing change.
We'll talk more about the process of change and what it takes to see life change, to find a new way to hope, to think, and to live. And we'll do that with our guest today, Jordan Easley. Jordan's teaching pastor and campus director at Long Hollow Baptist Church. It's in the suburban Nashville area, multi-site church there. And Jordan's written this great new book, and it's appropriate that we talk about it here this time of year. So stay tuned for more of the conversation on today's Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and today we're talking about life change. That's the title of a new book from Jordan Easley. The subtitle is Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, to Live. It's published by Brodmann Holman. Jordan is teaching pastor and campus director at Long Hollow Baptist. It's a multi-site church in the Nashville area, and it's a book that's got a great foreword from Gary Thomas. Jordan has the privilege of having worked with a lot of gifted and notable pastors over the years, and now is leading a large congregation himself, and we're just excited to be able to take some time today to consider what it means to live in change. And Jordan, we touched a little bit about the importance of friends with faith. You know, when we think about change, support groups, accountability partners seem to be the important thing. Are there some lessons for us today that, you know, we can't do this on our own? I think that's probably, as you've said all the way along, we have to be desperate, but we can't do it on our own, can we?
Well, you know, it's hard. And when you're in a constant battle, it's hard to fight any war alone. So I think that it's important to surround yourself with people that are going to move you forward. You know, it's great to have people that are alongside you, that are going to support you, and they're going to pray for you, and they're going to walk hand in hand with you during this process of pursuing change. So I think it's important to surround yourself with great people, but I don't think that we should depend on them for the change. Like I said earlier, you know, you've got to pursue change, but in your pursuit of change, turn that into a pursuit of Jesus, because he's the one that can change you. So in doing that, I think it's important that we don't stop and put our dependence on our friends or a step study, but that we trust Christ to do what only he can do in our life.
You've used the word change agent, or I guess an advocate. Talk a little bit about that and the importance of that.
Well, I think that for some reason in my mind, this whole process of change, it happens in the middle of on a battlefield. And I don't talk about that a lot in the book. That's just the imagery that pops into my mind. And on the battlefield, I think you've got two people. You've got God, who I call the change agent, and then you have Satan, who is the change fighter. And there's an entire chapter in this book talking about the change fighter, Satan himself, and how he basically wages war against us in this pursuit of change. And I talk about, you know, practically how he likes to attack us and how he tries to cut us off in moments where we're starting to generate momentum towards change. And I just believe that – I believe there's a battle going on and that God wants you to become more like him. He wants you to run to him. He wants you to be desperate for him. But in that pursuit, there's somebody that's against you. And so when you look at the change fighter and you look at how he's working against us, you realize that this isn't going to be easy. I think that's one of the main reasons that we fail so many times in our pursuit of change. You say, we're going to change and we're going to do this, and yet we make it halfway and then we stop and we get cut off or we get eliminated in some way. So I just believe that Jesus is more powerful. I think the Bible's pretty clear. I've read Revelation. I've seen how the story ends. So I'm pretty confident that if we run to God, that in that pursuit of him, that he can teach us a lot about himself. He can show us a lot about who Satan is and who he's not. And he can show us that change is possible in our life.
Should we expect a dramatic, maybe immediate change? I mean, like the miracles recounted in Mark's gospel. I mean, is that something we should be looking for today, expecting miracles?
I think if we're expecting immediate results, I think we're setting ourselves up for failure a lot of times. I'm not saying that immediate results aren't going to happen, but at the same time, God's timetable always looks a lot different than ours, and we all know that. And I was reading just in my quiet time yesterday the story in 1 Kings, I think it's 1 Kings 19, I think verse 19 to 21, is talking about when Elijah is the transition between Elijah and Elisha.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the story where the mantle falls on Elisha's shoulders. And he's just a normal guy. And he's a normal guy plowing a field behind 24 oxen. And that's just what he does. He's plowing a field. He's away from everybody. And he didn't know this, but the whole time that he was just doing normal life, God was working behind the scenes to prepare him for something better, something greater. And, you know, it says that in the book of John, that those who believe in me will do far greater things than even I have done. And that's an incredible thought to think that Jesus himself said that. But, you know, that's a great picture of what Jesus was talking about. You know, when he's plowing a field and all of a sudden Elijah shows up and this mantle falls on his shoulders, and he didn't even know it, but he was going to do far greater than Elijah ever did. But it was several years before it ever happened. You know, the mantle fell on his shoulders, and it's several years before he sees that change take place. But in the long run, the change was inevitable. In the long run, he did twice as many miracles as Elijah. In the long run, he was the one who raised people from the dead. He changed the entire economy of a city with one simple word from his mouth. You see that God did incredible things in his life through that change process, but it didn't happen immediately. The mantle hit his shoulders immediately, but the blessing that followed the obedience of him burning the plows and killing his cows and doing all of these extreme things, you know, the blessing followed the obedience, but it didn't happen immediately. It took several years for him to experience what God had intended for him to have.
Talk a little bit more about how how God does his work in us to build our faith and sometimes calls us out. You know, thinking about the woman in the crowd, you know, getting called out and having to sort of explain what had taken place. I mean, you have other illustrations too in the Gospel of Mark where Jesus, you know, didn't let someone just sort of walk away or run away.
You know, you think about that story, and that's just one of the questions that I had never really thought about until a couple of years ago. But when that lady reached out and she touched him and was healed, Jesus, he could have kept on walking. He didn't have to say anything, but he called her out, didn't he? He called her out and he gave her an opportunity to testify. He gave her an opportunity in front of the people to say something. And he wanted to give her a chance to use her testimony to impact the people around her. God, you know, God does a lot of things in our life, and I think when God does allow us to experience some kind of life change that we're pursuing, I think he gives us opportunities to really give the credit, to give the glory to who it belongs to. And so, you know, in your pursuit of change this year, even if it's a small thing, I think it's important that we as believers, that we give the credit to who it's due. And that was an incredible testimony for her, because when she said something, when she spoke up, you know, it impacted the people around her. And I believe in the same way, when we're faithful and we give credit to God for the life change that we get to experience, I think that God is honored, and I think it'll impact the people around us as well.
You know, in that story, there's an official inviting Jesus to come take care of his daughter, and so he's, you know, he's kind of hurrying along the way, and Jesus stops to take care of this woman. How do we deal with that maybe when others are experiencing change and we're still waiting?
Well, the comparison game is never going to end up good for us. Anytime you're comparing yourself to other people, you're putting yourself in a position to be set up, to be disappointed, because there's always going to be other people that experience things that we want to experience. There's always going to be somebody with a bigger house or a better-looking family or a nicer mother-in-law. There's always going to be somebody that has something that you wish you had. So in every case, I would say, you know, try to avoid the comparison game. Try to avoid it at all costs, but just trust God in your circumstance. I think that it's important that we have to have blinders on in our pursuit of change and in our pursuit of Christ, because Satan will use any kind of tool he can to distract us. So you look around and you're like, okay, here's the thing. I'm praying for this family member to be healed, But so-and-so, they're not even a strong believer. They don't even go to church, and yet their family member had this horrible disease, and they're being healed, and they're better, and they're walking around, and they're getting to spend the holidays with their grandkids, and we're comparing ourselves. And when we do that, we take our focus off of Jesus, and we put it on ourselves. And we start saying, why me, instead of why God, or please God, or our dependence changes, our desperation changes, our focus changes altogether. So I would highly recommend, and we've seen that throughout the text, that when you lose your focus on Christ, that everything changes in your pursuit of change.
Jordan Easley is my guest, and we're talking about his new book called Life Change, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live. Jordan is a teaching pastor and campus director at Long Hollow Baptist. It's a multi-site church in suburban Nashville, and we're talking with him today appropriately about change, and we're going to get some practical steps here in just a moment, and some things that we can do to see change take place in this new year. That's all coming up here on Connecting Faith.
Real encouragement for an active walk of faith. Podcast audio of today's programs on Faith Radio in case you missed the show. The very latest on conferences and events in your area. It's all in one place and delivered right to your inbox from Faith Radio when you subscribe by email to myfaithradio.com. Head to myfaithradio.com and enter your email address in the subscribe box right at the top of the page, helping you connect faith to life every day at myfaithradio.com.
As parents, you always want to know what or who is influencing your children. While most of us have a good handle on this in the real world, did you ever think about who could be influencing your child online? Zabra is a new way for you to protect and monitor your kids' influences while on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zabra works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to alert you to potentially harmful conversations on social media. Zabra gives you peace of mind. For more information, visit Zabra.com. That's Zabra.com to get started today.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. We've got a bit more time with Jordan Easley today, talking about his book, Life Change. And isn't that what all of us are really longing for? The subtitle is Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live. Jordan serves as a teaching pastor and campus director at Long Hollow Baptist Church. It's in Hendersonville, Tennessee, a multi-site church in the suburban Nashville area. And, Jordan, I'm thinking about, we all long for change. We say so anyway, but what do we do if a family member or spouse maybe needs to change and they don't want to, and we're, is there a place for us to be sort of pushing them on?
Well, there's going to be many times when you can identify change that needs to happen in somebody else easy. I don't know why. It's somewhat easier to find change that somebody else needs to have instead of finding it in your own life.
That's true.
Perhaps you have a friend or a loved one that needs to change, and for whatever reason, they just can't see it. As a friend, it may not be our place to show them their need, but rather to ask God to reveal to them the need in which they have. There will be other times when God uses us in instrumental ways to begin the life change process in somebody else's life, but we must remember that supernatural change only happens by a supernatural God, and we are incapable of changing anyone.
Well, let's talk about some, it's maybe before we get to that, is it ever... We're going to talk about some practical steps, but is it ever too late to change? I mean, I think there may be some people listening right now say, I'm not even going to try, I'm not even going to ask God. I don't have any expectations anymore.
Chapter 5 of the book is entitled, It's Never Too Late for Change. And really, it's about where to go when change is needed. There's a lot of times when people say, change is a dirty word. And most of us don't want to admit it, that it's a dirty word, but, we say that it's okay. We say we're okay with change, but at the same time, we sit in the exact same seat every Sunday, and we do the exact same things all the time. We wear the same cologne or perfume. We have the same friends. We eat at the same restaurants. We have the same conversations. It's fashionable to say that we're okay with change, but the reality is that most of us despise the very thought of it. And change for us, there's a lot of times that say, or a lot of people that say, well, I've been asking for this change or pursuing this change for a long time, or I'm too old, or my relative is too near death. It's too late for change. And what we do is we give up. And when we give up on change, what we're really doing is we're giving up on God. And God says, you know what, it's never too late for me to do what I do. It's never too late for him to come in at the last second. Listen, it doesn't matter. If there is time on the clock, God is still capable of doing something incredible in your life or the life of somebody that you love.
Well, let's talk about some of the ways that we can put the message of the book into practice. In fact, I know you you end the book with a series of just some practical steps and a good summary. So, we want to see life change in the new year. What's the first, second, third thing? Even though I know it's not a book about steps, but give us some practical insights there too.
Well, I'll go through some of the things in the final chapter. You know what? I was one of those guys, I'm just going to be honest with you, in school, where if I was given an assignment to read a book, I would read the first chapter and I'd read the last chapter a lot of times. And so as I was writing this book, I was like, man, if I run into somebody else that's like me, I want them to get a good gospel story in the first chapter and see how God works. But then the last chapter, I want to put it into terms. We're giving some certain and some simple principles that you can kind of go by as a guide in your pursuit of change. And so that's the way I wrote the last chapter of the book. I'll just mention a couple of them. The first one I wrote down is you have to recognize your need for change. You're never going to pursue change until first you realize that there's something broken, that something isn't right. And that's most of us in our life. We have something in our life that needs to change, and recognizing that really is the first step. The second one is to pursue change. And you know, we've talked about that, about walking towards change, about positioning your life where you're pursuing the change that you're so desperate for. But in that process, you know, it needs to be more of pursuing Christ than pursuing change. The other one is to pinpoint obstacles that prevent change. You know, in every single one of our pursuits of change, there are different obstacles along the way that are going to serve as hurdles that we're going to have to jump over. My dad ran college track, and he used to say, you know, as he ran the 400-meter hurdles, which is one time around the track, and the hurdles were the same height, but he said, as you jump those hurdles, they seem like they got higher as the race went on. And that's just a great picture of what life seems like in our pursuit of change. It seems like Satan puts hurdles in our way, and they seem to get higher and higher and higher as the race goes on. But I think by pinpointing those obstacles that are going to be in our path as we're trying to pursue change, they're trying to prevent change, and it's good for us to pinpoint them and know what those things are. Another one is to constantly run away from the bait. You know, we talk a little bit about Satan in the book and how he likes to bait us. I don't know if you're a fisherman or not. I used to go, my grandparents used to live in Monticello, Minnesota, and we would go ice fishing. And, man, what was the name of that lake? It was Mille Lacs Lake.
Mille Lacs Lake, sure.
You familiar with Mille Lacs?
Yes.
Well, we would go ice fishing on Mille Lacs Lake. And, you know, he would say, if we're going to catch walleye, we have to fish with a certain kind of bait. And it wasn't, hey, let's try two or three different kinds of bait. It wasn't, hey, let's try a variety of bait. It was, hey, we're going to sit here in this little camper, and we're going to freeze our tail off all night long, and we're going to fish with this one certain bait. Why? Because that's what they like. That's what they're tempted by. That's what they're going to strike every single time. And you know what? It worked. In the same way, Satan knows exactly what kind of bait to get us on the hook. He knows exactly what we're tempted by, exactly what we're enticed by, and that is floating in front of us a lot of times. So in our pursuit of Christ, we have to be able to constantly identify the bait that Satan's using to get us off track, and we've got to be committed to running away from that bait if we're going to stay on the right path. Does that make sense?
It does, and it just made me cold just thinking about sitting out there in Mille Lacs. But
I tell you what, I've never been so cold in my life, but that's some great times. I'll tell you what, on that ice. And
well, you know, you just sort of touched on it, but maybe as kind of in closing, we talk about the idea of you address the, you know, positioning ourselves for change, and you know, maybe that's the takeaway we can hear today as we head into the new year. Say, you know, above all, we, you know, whether we you know, have some obstacles to overcome, at least we can get ourselves in position. Talk a bit more about that.
Well, you know, the question is, what position does your life have to be in for real, lasting change? Anybody can change their life for a little bit. But if you're talking about real, lasting change, where does your life have to be? I start that chapter off by talking about the fact that when my dad called a family meeting, it was never a good thing. The summer after my third grade year, he called a meeting that would literally change the course of my life. He said the words that every preacher's kid has heard at least one point or another. He said, God has called us to another church, and we are going to be moving soon. You know, as a kid, those are words that are devastating. And my parents didn't understand that I was pretty well established where I was. I had great friends and a school, and I had a girlfriend, and nothing inside of me had the desire to change at all. And yet that change I was faced with head on. Needless to say, despite my fighting and my bickering, my parents packed up the entire house. They loaded up the car, and we looked at everything that we knew as normal in the rearview mirror. I'll never forget the terror I felt later that summer as we prepared to begin the fall in a brand new school. Typically, you know, buying school supplies was fun, but this time it was different. My mind wasn't focused on the new trapper keeper that I was going to get, or the backpack, or the school supplies. All of a sudden, I was just worried about the change I was about to experience. On the first day of school, you know, I woke up and made my way to the kitchen. My mom, she made breakfast on the table, and there were a brand new backpack in our chairs, and there were school supplies inside the backpack. But I looked inside, and there was also packs of gum. I said, Mom, why are there? There's probably 20 packs of gum. I said, Mom, why are there 20 packs of gum inside of my backpack? And she said, Well, the gum is there, so you can make friends. So, Mom, what are you talking about? So I can make friends. Gum isn't even allowed at my school. And she said, Well, here's what you got to do. She said, When you go to the lunch table today, I want you to look around, and I want you to pick the table that you want to be a part of. And pick the ones that you think that are going to be the best friends for you, and then I want you to walk up to that table, and I want you to say to them, Hey, I'm new to town. My name is Jordan, and I just wanted to know, do you guys want some gum? I was like, Mom, I'm not going to do that. That's insane. Why in the world would I do that? And she said, Just trust me, it'll work. Well, I went to school that day, and there was no way I was going to do that. My mom had this idea that that's the best way to make friends. And I was like, Man, there's no way that I'm going to put myself out there like that. Well, you know what I did? I showed up to lunch, and I didn't know what to do, so I looked around, and I was like, Here's some guys I want to hang out with. I walk up to their table, and I say, Hey, guys, I want to be friends with you. I'm new to town. You want some gum? And they looked at me, and they basically said, You know what? We want the gum, but we don't want anybody else sitting at our table. But I decided in my head that day, you know what? I'm going to do everything I can to be friends with those guys. I looked around the school. There was nobody else I wanted to hang out with. As the new kid in town, those are the guys that I wanted to hang out with. And I realized real quick it was going to be tough to be their friends. But I started noticing things about them. I noticed that they all had the same haircut. I noticed they all wore the same kind of tennis shoes. They all wore the same brand of clothes. They all went to the same things. They all played on the same sports team. They were doing all of these different things that I wasn't doing. So strategically, I started changing things in my life to become more like those guys. I started changing my haircut. I changed my wardrobe. I changed the way that I was walking and talking. I changed everything about my life in order to become like those guys. And you know what? It paid off. It paid off because I became friends with those guys. But becoming friends with those guys, it transitioned me into a period of my childhood that I wish I could take back. Because, you know, I went to a party, and I talk about this a little bit in the book. I went to a birthday party, which you would think, you know, is a sixth grade birthday party. It's going to be pretty innocent, but it ended up landing some of these guys in jail. And the story on how that happens, you've got to read that in the book, because it really is it's an interesting and entertaining story about how one simple night can really change a lot in your life. But I started thinking about the process of me getting there, and the process it took to get from that first day in that lunchroom to that party where the red and blue lights were flashing. It had to do with me being willing to change everything in my life to get there. Once again, the direction of your life determines the destination of your life, and the destination of your life is going to determine your destiny. And so positioning yourself for change has to do with that same thing, except hopefully you're going to be changing your life for the better and not the worse, like I was as a child. But we have to be willing to adjust our life, position our life. You know, the rest of that chapter, or the rest of that last chapter, after talking about, you know, running away from the bait, that's the last couple of things that I mentioned as far as principles. It's staying alert to your surroundings. You've got to know what's around you. You've got to go to the change agent. You have to be desperate. You have to be persistent and consistent and determined. You have to be willing to change everything in your life for the sake of the gospel and Jesus and what he wants to do in your world. And you see, a lot of times it's not about what we want. We think, well, my life needs to change like this, when God is saying, no, your life needs to change like this, and they're complete opposites. But you know what? He knows better than we do. And a lot of it has to do with, number one, believing in him, number two, trusting him, and the third thing is just obeying him in our life.
Jordan Easley, my guest today, you're talking about his great new book called Life Change, Finding a New Way to Hope, Think, and Live, recommended reading for the new year. You'll find it particularly encouraging, I think, and some wonderful reminders again about the gospel. And Jordan, I guess before I let you go, I'm just curious, are you reading the gospels different now as a result of kind of doing this study? You see Jesus in different eyes?
I tell you what, the words really do pop off the page. I read it differently now that I've been to the Holy Land, to be honest with you. Now that I've walked where Jesus walked, you know, where he walked and where some of the stories took place, and you get to read them a little bit differently, but you also get to know the one thing that I've just been reminded of as I've read through the Gospels is that Jesus doesn't give up on us, and he doesn't abandon us. And, you know, a lot of people have been burned by their earthly father. There's a lot of bad relationship memories and things like that, and it's hard for us to understand a father who would never do that. But God, he doesn't abandon us. He listens to us. He's there for us. And even when the results of our pursuit of change, you know, we can be desperate all we want, but there's still going to be moments where we don't get what we're asking for. But I think that's just another important moment for us spiritually to be reminded that God has a greater plan that we can't understand, that we can't fathom. You know, the Bible talks about it being unimaginable. Well, it really is. You know, there's a lot of times that prayer is the thing that moves the heart of God. But there's other times when we don't get what we ask for, and it's easy for us to turn our back on God. But at the same time, we've got to be reminded that God hasn't turned his back on us. That, you know, if there's still time on the clock, that there's still time for God to work, and we need to trust him, and we need to have faith in him. And in this new year, I think it's just important for us to position ourselves in a place where we're not pursuing change, but we're pursuing God, and we're trusting him with the change that needs to happen in our life.
Amen. Jordan Easley, teaching pastor, campus director at Long Hollow Baptist Church in suburban Nashville, author of the book Life Change. Jordan, blessings. Thank you for this encouragement today, and I look forward to chatting down the road.
Well, happy new year to you guys. You guys stay warm.
You're listening to Connecting Faith.